This is the Dave Steering Show on KFQD. Dial 522-0750 outside of Anchorage. Toll free, 888-990-750. And now, here's Dave Steering.
Welcome back to the Dave Steering Show. This is Larry Barscott filling in for Dave. You are listening on FM 103.7 and 750 AM. We're also streaming at KFQD.com. If you want to call in, join the show. Give me your opinion on something. Argue with me about the Second Amendment, what it really means. Please feel free, 522-0750. If you are outside of Anchorage, 888-909-0750. Shifting gears a little bit, I want to introduce some folks that are coming in at the bottom of the hour. They're going to be coming in at 3:30. We're going to spend a couple segments with them. And these guys are pretty busy. They flew up to the state for a couple of days, so just take the advantage of introducing them here, and please do stick around because I think it's going to be a very good conversation. My guests today are Charles Silver and David Hyman, and they wrote a book called Overcharged: Why Americans Pay Too Much for Healthcare. They went through and took a look at the drivers of healthcare costs in the nation and lay out in pretty good detail. The book itself, I think I've got it here with me, is a pretty decent volume, and I have to confess, reading it actually raised my blood pressure. They have some pretty egregious examples of what is actually responsible for the costs of American healthcare. Worldwide, the American healthcare system, while very good at producing results in different places, is expensive. Other countries do provide health care for less expense. Other countries have different systems of health care. We have a pretty unique system here. So Charles Silver, MAJD, is an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute and holds the Roy W. and Eugenia C. McDonald Endowed Chair in Civil Procedure at the University of Texas School of Law, where he teaches about civil litigation, health care policy, legal ethics, and insurance. His writings on class actions and other aggregate proceedings, litigation finance, medical malpractice, and legal and medical ethics have appeared in leading peer-reviewed journals and law reviews. In 2009, the Tort Trial and Insurance Practice section of the American Bar Association awarded him the Robert McKay Law Professor Award for Outstanding Scholarship on Tort and Insurance. So no shrinking violet there. Clearly a fellow that understands what's going on and has spent time researching this stuff and recognized for it and now teaches it. David Hyman, MD, JD, is a professor at Georgetown University Law Center. He focuses his research and writing on the regulation and financing of healthcare and on empirical law and economics. He teaches or has taught healthcare regulation, civil procedure, insurance, medical malpractice, law and economics, professional responsibility, consumer protection, and tax policy. While serving as special counsel to the Federal Trade Commission, Professor Hyman was principal author and project leader for the first joint report ever issued by the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice, Improving Healthcare, A Dose of Competition. So the book was given to me a couple months ago, and I know in some certain circles it's making the rounds and is valuable for folks to take a look at and join the conversation on. The state of Alaska, so we know that the United States generally has relatively expensive health care. Alaska is even worse. Alaska, I think, has the most expensive health care in the United States, and there's a number of different factors. Hopefully we'll be able to get into that a little bit. What are the factors driving Alaska's health care costs with our guests?
The Dave Steering Show continues now, only on FM News 103.7 KFQD.
Welcome back to the Dave Steering Show. This is Larry Barscoff sitting in for Dave Steering. I am joined in studio with some guests. This is Charles Silver and Dave Hyman. They are authors of a book called Overcharged: Why Americans Pay Too Much for Healthcare. We're also joined by Bethany Markham. She's the executive director for the Alaska Policy Forum. And I know the Alaska Policy Forum has been engaged and taking a look what is driving the cost of healthcare in Alaska? And so Bethany is kind of a resident expert on the cost of the reasons that medical costs are as expensive as they are in Alaska. Gentlemen, I have to confess, when I was reading the book, my blood pressure actually went up. Some of the information that you guys present in there, frankly, is egregious. You know, things like why pharmacy prices are expensive as they are. You know, the benefits managers, the gaming the system, all the regulations that are laid down and giving opportunity for inefficiencies, for people to line their pockets, frankly, the fraud, waste, and abuse sections. I highly recommend the book to everybody listening. Go out, find a copy, and read it. So what do you guys, maybe just go through, what are the general items that are driving medical costs in America generally?
Well, in the pharmaceutical area, the problem is monopoly. So the manufacturers use patents or they use other techniques to gain sole control over the source of a medication. And then when they have monopoly control, they just do what a monopolist naturally does, which is raise the price to the highest amount that will be paid. And then that's coupled with a payment system that doesn't place any limits on what manufacturers can charge for drugs. These government agencies are mainly price takers. They pay whatever the pharmaceutical companies ask for these products. And the insurance companies are in a pickle because if they try not to pay what is demanded, they get accused of rationing or of denying their subscribers needed drugs. And so the sky's the limit, basically, when it comes to price setting for pharmaceuticals.
And if you look at other areas of the healthcare system, the book has a chapter on out-of-network billing or balance billing, surprise medical bills, which recent polling suggests is the number one concern of ordinary Americans, is they'll go to an in-network hospital, but they'll get the huge bill from the emergency department doctor that they saw, or they'll be taken by ambulance to a hospital that they don't have any control over, and then they'll get this gigantic bill. And their insurance company may cover some of it, but it's not going to cover the full amount, which has this very inflated rack rate or list price. And so our book talks about the economics of that and why it is that we see different things when you go to a hospital than when you go to, say, an auto body shop, mm-hmm. right, which we argue in the book. An auto body shop is like a hospital for cars, and a hospital is an auto body shop for people. And, you know, when you go to an auto body shop, they quote you an all-in upfront price. You don't get a surprise bill 6 months later from the guy who painted the bumper. And, in fact, if you did, you'd be outraged. Our basic argument is that these are the consequences of inadequate competition. And if hospitals were facing adequate competition, they'd have every incentive to protect patients from these surprise medical bills.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Here in Alaska, we're kind of a special case. Alaska has, I think, the highest healthcare costs in the nation. Can you guys identify what makes Alaska more special? Why are our costs so much more than anywhere else?
Special is one of those funny words, isn't it? Sometimes you don't want to be special. The whole country has a problem with healthcare spending, but things in Alaska do seem to be very extreme. Some of the problems in Alaska are problems that are also present everywhere else, because the whole country is on a really unsustainable curve when it comes to spending on healthcare. So the predominance of third-party payers in Alaska is a problem that plagues the rest of the country, too. Here you have a situation where you spend somewhat more because your Medicaid program is unusually generous to providers. In most places, Medicare, which is federally funded, pays more than Medicaid, but here you have the opposite, with Medicaid paying more than Medicare, which is kind of unusual. You also have a problem with a lot of state employees, people who are on the state's payroll or were on the state's payroll at one point in time, now being retirees and wanting health care benefits, and that turns out to be a very big drag on the state. The solutions are tough to find, especially because Alaska is geographically isolated. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a premium to be paid when you're geographically isolated, but the question is how large should the premium be? And the only way to find out is to allow as much competition as you can from providers elsewhere, not just here, but also in the lower 48. And that may be something that Alaskans themselves can take advantage of to reduce their own health care spending.
Yeah. Bethany, in your work over at the Policy Forum, what have you identified as other cost drivers for us here in Alaska?
Sure. So the number of providers, whether that be actual doctors and such or hospitals, is one of the factors most certainly. But one of the laws that we have on the books that causes that to some degree is what are called certificate of need laws. And certificate of need laws are those that really allow certain providers in a particular part of the industry to restrict the supply in that same part of the industry. So, for example, a hospital and other hospitals who are able to say that they don't want other hospitals to enter the market. And naturally, when you have that those kind of artificial constraints on supply, that's going to affect the ability for there to be competition and therefore lowering of cost.
Yeah.
In addition, Alaska has a law that I think is well-intentioned to address the out-of-network surprise medical bill problem. But it has some inherently inflationary consequences as well.
Is that that 80th percentile rule?
That's that 80th percentile rule.
Can you explain that in simple terms? Because I've heard it a number of times, and I've probably had it explained to me half a dozen times, and I still have trouble wrapping my head around it.
So let me first explain what it isn't, and then I'll explain what it is, because the 80th percentile name misleads people a little bit. They hear the name, and they think, oh, what this means is that my insurer has to pay 80% of whatever bill the doctor or out-of-network provider sends. That's not how it works. The way that it works is that there's a collection of bills that have been sent, and what it requires the insurer to do is to use the 80th percentile of those out-of-network bills that have been sent as a basis to calculate how much it will pay. So it doesn't pick the bottom quarter, for example.
Right,
and
right.
The additional complication is that the people sending the bills control how big the bills are, and so keying it to the 80th percentile of whatever bills they send has an inherently inflationary consequence.
Does the small number of providers, our small provider pool that Bethany was talking about earlier, also kind of exacerbate that situation? Because if we have a small handful of specialists, one specialist office across town raises their prices, and it doesn't take long for everybody to hear about that price increase, and another sort of, I can imagine, inflationary reaction takes place.
So the 80th percentile rule wouldn't work well even if you had a large number of providers.
Very good.
Okay, but having a small number of providers creates lots of opportunities for collusion between them, follow the leader pricing of the sort that you were identifying. So that will make that problem worse.
Got it. Well, the authors of the book are here, and they don't just list problems that we are having. They actually lay out some pretty good solutions. And my understanding is there are some bills actually pending in the legislature or have been introduced to try and deal with this. Let's take a break here, and we will get back with our guests here at the Dave Steering Show, Larry Barskow filling in.
Setting fools straight. The Dave Steering Show, only from KFQD. This is the Dave Steering Show on FM News 103.7 KFQD.
Welcome back to the Dave Steering Show. This is Larry Barskow filling in for Dave. I am in studio with some guests, the authors of the book Overcharged, Why Americans Pay Too Much for Healthcare, Charles Silver and David Hyman. Also with us is Executive Director of the Alaska Policy Forum, Bethany Markham. So, David, you were talking about the 80th percentile rule, and we kind of want to get into solutions here in the last few minutes we have here at the bottom of the hour. Do you have a solution to that?
I have some ideas. I should note, first of all, that other states are trying to deal with this issue as well. And at lots of hospitals, it's a non-problem because they've figured out how to prevent those bills from being sent out in the first place, typically by requiring doctors who are on staff to be in network for the same insurers that the hospital is in network for. And in a white paper that I published yesterday, which you can find at the American Enterprise Institute website, AEI.org, it's called Solving Surprise Medical Billing. It's also going to be on the Alaska Policy Forum website tomorrow. We offer what we think are much better solutions to this problem than anything like the 80% rule or what some of the other states are doing. The thing is, you want to avoid trying to do rate setting because it's very hard to do. It's very subject to capture and lobbying. And even if you happen to hit the right market price initially, it won't stay static.
Yeah, it's kind of tough for legislation or regulation to keep up with changing market forces.
Exactly. No matter how well-intentioned they are, and inevitably they end up being lobbied heavily to reward the providers who spend a lot of time thinking about how to maximize their revenues, which is why the 80% approach doesn't work either.
Very good. Charles, what about you? Do you have any preferred solutions, stuff that we should be taking a look at up here in Alaska?
For out-of-network bills?
For out-of-network billing or other concerns, mm-hmm. things that you think could be implemented to help reduce or at least slow down the growth of our healthcare costs.
Yes, I think there are some things that can be done with regard to out-of-network bills. Some insurance companies have taken the position that if a patient who is admitted in network is treated at a hospital by an out-of-network physician, they won't pay any of the bills. So an interesting possibility might be that insurers could go to bat for their patients and say, you know, make sure all the doctors who treat our people are in network. And so that would eliminate balance billing entirely. And then as far as healthcare costs are concerned, I think you're going to have to continue using what we call medical tourism extensively, which means you're geographically isolated, so you face limits on access to healthcare providers. But there are no limits on the availability of these providers in the 48 continental United States. So send people elsewhere to get their healthcare, or maybe go there voluntarily, because you can save thousands and thousands of dollars on expensive treatments by getting them done somewhere else.
So that medical tourism approach, just to be clear, is just a way of increasing the supply of providers. And so complementary strategies would include getting rid of certificate of need, because it's a constraint on new providers coming in, and existing providers changing their portfolio of services to compete with incumbents, and also things like telemedicine, which Alaska is actually doing a pretty good job with. It's a critical way of ensuring access to often very sophisticated medical treatment for people who are extremely geographically isolated, even by the standards of Alaska.
One of the arguments I've heard against medical tourism is the aftercare. The aftercare after a procedure. It's the difficulty a patient might have in finding a doctor, and the scare quotes liability that comes with somebody else's work coming back to Alaska. What's your guys' perspective on that issue?
Well, if there are agreements among providers not to treat people, provide aftercare for people who go out of state, that's going to be an antitrust violation. And the government should be quite aggressive in policing that. The other thing is, though, that that's not a stable strategy. For a provider to resist treating a patient at a rate that is profitable doesn't make any sense. They're cutting off their nose to spite their own face. So over the long term, what should happen is that attitude should change as providers realize that they're losing money. The further thing to do is diversify the forums through which treatments can be received. You know, a lot of aftercare is pretty routine stuff, depends on what the condition is, but a lot of aftercare is just checking up on people to see how they're doing. That could be provided through retail medical outlets at shopping malls and things of that sort, and as those proliferate, they put more and more pressure on providers to treat customers better, so I hope that those will continue to grow.
Yeah, I'd also make the point that if prices were lower here in Alaska, there wouldn't be an incentive for patients to head elsewhere to receive care. So it's a bit much for the providers to complain about medical tourism when they're the cause of the incentive for people to go elsewhere.
Yeah, if I can add to that, experience shows that you don't actually have to go elsewhere. What you have to be able to do is to threaten to go somewhere else. If you can credibly threaten to get your operation in Colorado or Oklahoma or some other place, then what starts to happen is that the providers who are local see that the business is leaving the state, and sometimes they offer to meet the prices of the out-of-state providers just to keep the business. So don't think you might necessarily have to leave. You might be able to tell your provider, hey, you know what, I'm thinking of going to Washington for this procedure, and be surprised at the discount you'll receive.
There's an actual case study of that in our book involving Maine, which, you know, is a large rural state where there are challenges that are similar, and certainly not identical, but similar to those that are faced by Alaskans.
And Bethany, I know that you keep an eye on what's going down in Juneau. Is there anything legislatively that's currently in the works that might address some of these issues?
Yes, there is a bill to repeal Certificate of Need, Senate Bill 1. That actually has a hearing next week. There are at least two bills to expand telehealth. As David pointed out, we really have a very robust telehealth system, but there are certainly things we could do to make it even more so, and there are at least two bills currently pending in the legislature that would expand telehealth. And then there's also a bill to encourage direct primary care, which is another way of providing health care that really takes the middleman out, the third-party payer, out of the system, and therefore allows really better service at lower cost.
Is direct primary care and that retail medicine that you were talking about, is that kind of the same thing?
Different versions of it. There are a lot of different models upon which people can get health care that they pay for directly, and the best solution is to allow entrepreneurs to innovate in this area. One of the things that we suggest in the book that is quite radical but would really supercharge the development of the retail healthcare sector is converting the way Medicaid works from a service purchasing operation into a simple cash transfer program along the lines of food stamps or Social Security or the earned income tax credit. Basically, the idea would be to give people money that might be in a restricted account, but which they get to decide how to spend it. And when they realize that they control the money and can get more for their dollar by shopping for cheaper services, they'll start to do that, and the retail sector will grow in response to that.
That argument is, or that policy, comes out of our original diagnosis that insurance, particularly the kind of insurance we have in Alaska and elsewhere in the United States, is an important driver of higher healthcare spending, because everyone perceives they're spending somebody else's money. At the point of service, patients bear on average about 11% of the cost. They've paid for a very expensive insurance policy, and they're very interested in making sure they get everything that might help them. Whereas if it was their own money that they were spending and they had a catastrophic coverage policy that would cover them against a complete wipeout, which is how insurance works in the rest of the market, right? Your homeowner's insurance doesn't cover you for painting your house. Your car insurance doesn't cover you for getting your oil changed. It's when the house gets struck by lightning or there's an earthquake and it's a total wipeout. Very unlikely, but very expensive. And that's how insurance ought to work in healthcare as well.
And so the book, again, is called Overcharged, Why Americans Pay Too Much for Healthcare. Again, I thought the book a very interesting read, and I thank everybody for coming in and joining me on air. It's certainly a conversation that all of us up here in Alaska need to be having. The governor's budget is calling for, taking a real good look at the Medicaid program. It's one of the biggest drivers of cost in Alaska, in our public dollar spending. I think another very good point that was brought up is the number of government employees that we do have. You know, the public dollars, the part of the benefit that those public employees are getting is having their health insurance paid for. So you've got this pool of money that's flowing into the healthcare system, and there's no real control over it. So it's definitely a conversation. The governor has started the conversation. We're proud to be part of that conversation. Thank you again, everybody, for coming in, and thanks again for writing the book. I suggest everybody go out and read it. You're listening to the Dave Steering Show.